Welcome to Breitbart News Daily. Thanks for being here. On the show today, we talked to Conrad Lord Black. Dr. Gorka mentions him all the time. I was like, let's chat with him. His book is The Political and Strategic History of the World, Volume 1. And we were joking, three volumes? And it is, actually. It's three. But the first one just came out. He's working through his second now. So we talked with him in the show. Coming up in a minute, though, we'll play the interview we did with AWR Hawkins, our Second Amendment correspondent, because we got a couple Second Amendment wins that are worth celebrating. We'll kick off here with one of our first segments of the show. It's actually the second segment of the first hour, where we gave a rebuttal to the gentleman who called in on Friday saying, well, Biden's pretty good. You know, that infrastructure bill was good. And that just, like, I thought about that all weekend, just about how like lame that is. And it's not to critique him. I'm not saying he's lame. Just like that idea that we're like supposed to be excited about repairing a highway overpass bill. Here's my rebuttal. Best write-up on the political implications of moral truth versus moral relativism is Thomas Sowell's The Conflict of Visions. The Conflict of Visions. A shorter read, just brilliant, makes sense of everything. It was written a couple decades ago, but the principle, of course, is ancient. So you have the relativist left, everything's relative, no moral truth, no moral absolutes. Nothing is more true now than truth. There's no truth. Nothing's more true. Nothing's more wrong. Nothing you do is wrong. Nothing anyone does is wrong. It's all relative because there's no God of the universe who made anything. So it's all up to me in this very moment to decide because I'm the center of the universe, which is just a recipe for disaster. So that's The Conflict of Visions by Thomas Sowell. All right. So someone called in yesterday and said Slater, we're talking about the State of the Union, or she called on Friday. Slater, State of the Union's not so bad. Biden's not so bad. I think it was in this very segment. You may remember. And he said, Slater, he passed the infrastructure bill. Passed the infrastructure bill. Okay. Like, you got me, I guess. So I looked up the infrastructure bill. $55 billion for clean drinking water. How could we live in a country where, according to the Biden administration, up to 10 million American households and 10 million and 400,000 schools and childcare centers lack safe drinking water. How is that possible? Where do these people live? Dare I say they live in blue areas? I wonder. Okay, great. Clean drinking water. You want to talk about the State of the Union? Like, you want to get to brass tacks on the State of the Union? Well, apparently 10 million Americans don't drink clean water. That's a problem. Let's just get to basics here. They talked about in this infrastructure bill, high-speed internet access. This is, I think, what the caller was talking about. Repair and rebuild our roads and bridges with a focus on climate change mitigation, resilience, equity, and safety for all users. In the United States, 1 in 5 miles of highways and major roads and 45,000 bridges are in poor condition. So he said we got to spend $110 billion on repairing roads and bridges. Wow, what an amazing president. Improve transportation options for millions of Americans and reduce greenhouse emissions through the largest investment in public transit in U.S. history. Okay, make sure we have good climate change resilience. And equity, whatever climate change equity is. Upgrade our nation's airports and ports to strengthen our supply chains and prevent disruptions that have caused inflation. Love that. It's great. First of all, we have terrible airports in this country, many terrible airports. But I love the president blaming inflation on our airports. Infrastructure bills, passenger rail, electric vehicle chargers, solar panels, goes on and on. Okay, so there's your infrastructure bill. Caller thinks it's great. So I guess my response is that's pretty lame if that makes the top of your achievement list. We used to live. I think this is a great example, actually, though, state of the country. Oh, Al, hang on the line. We used to live in a country that did amazing things. Things we look back on today in awe. How was that even possible? We used to build the Golden Gate Bridge and the Hoover Dam and the Panama Canal and the Transcontinental Railroad. Kids and I were playing near a railroad the other day, and we just admired, how is it possible to build a railroad? Like, how do they level the ground? How do they lay the ties? How do they bring the metal? How do they hammer in the, right? Like, it seems impossible to lay a railroad. And we put it across the entire country, many of them. We used to do amazing things. We used to put the faces of presidents into the side of mountains just because we felt like it. And now we're supposed to get aroused at, we fixed up a concrete bridge in Scranton. Or we repaired a highway overpass. Yay. Now, if we try to build anything new, like the New York City subway line, you know, the newest New York City subway line, it's like a mile and a half. And it was $2.5 billion. I think it was $2.5 billion. Now, what was it per mile? Whatever it was 12 times more expensive than similar subway projects around the world. 12 times as expensive. Not twice as expensive. 12 times as expensive. That's where we are today. We built 102 stories of the Empire State Building in 13 months. And it's still standing. It's still there. It's still stunning. Still a landmark. Still the landmark of the city. Took 13 months to throw up. We used to do awesome things. We used to build modern marvels. And now a president can pass a bill that raises taxes and borrows money to repair roads, and we think we're something special. I find that pretty pathetic. There was a man, his name was Colonel Frederick Lander. It's the early mid 1800s. And he led an expedition. This was after Lewis and Clark. And his mission, which Congress paid for, was to travel west to build roads for wagons. For settlers who wanted to head out west. And he realized he could do this, and he could find the best route and make a guidebook for people on how to go and what to travel with, and how to avoid dangerous Indians and find the helpful Indians. But what he couldn't do was force people to make the trek, especially when there were all these horror stories about what the bad Indians will do to you. And those stories certainly made it to the newspapers out east, so people were hesitant to even go. So what he decided to do was to bring a group of artists with him on their surveying trips. And one of those painters was Albert Bierstadt. And you've seen his paintings before. His most famous is probably Valley of the Yosemite. You've probably seen that one. And then his other one, he wrote, the one is Last of the Buffalo is a famous one, but the most famous is Lander's Peak. And so give it a Google. Just Lander's Peak, it'll pop up. Lander's Peak painting. And it's these stunning, stunning paintings. Paintings, I don't even know how a human could paint this. How's it possible to use paint on a canvas to do it? Doesn't it make sense? These beautiful paintings of God's creation. Places in our country that people have never seen before. Places of such beauty, you couldn't believe it. And his paintings made it to people back in civilization, and they couldn't believe it. They said, this is America. It's unreal. And it just inspired something grand inside of them. Look what we're capable of. No, it wasn't even look what we're capable of, because we haven't done anything yet. It's look what God blessed us with. We have to rise to the occasion. Lander went back. He gave a speech called The Aptitude of the American Mind for the Cultivation of the Fine Arts. And he said, if the nation's poets, if we could just find our voice, then our poets could stand on the sea of glass mingled with fire, having the harps of God, which is Revelation 15. Back then, when we were a Christian nation, everyone knew what that was a reference to. He could, quote, stand on the sea of glass mingled with fire, having the harps of God. And everyone was like, oh, wow, what a great reference to Revelation 15. That's what we used to be. But Lander's point was, look how stunning God's creation is on this piece of land that is ours. This place is special. Therefore, the character of this nation must be just as excellent. That was his point. Look at this land. Look how beautiful it is. We need to be just as wonderful. We need to be just as virtuous. We need to be just as excellent as what God has created here with the Rocky Mountains. That was the whole thing. So my point of bringing this up is our first colonists thought big and went through hell to get here. Imagine sitting on these boats off the coast waiting for winter to be over and half of everyone dying on the ship. Like the ship, half the people dying around you. Horrific. Can't even fathom. Then the next generation built places to live. How do you do that? And then generations after that fought for this country, fought a war to make it ours. And then the next generation traveled west, journeys that took months. And then the craziest thing is the destination is a piece of land that you have to then clear and toil for your entire life to maybe grow some food on it to barely survive. It's not like you travel west for a couple months and then you get to LA. You know what I mean? Where you get a nice, you know, shower at a nice hotel. Like, no, there's nothing there. These people are tough as nails. And they had to make their own nails too. Not even sure how you did that back then. But they did it all. They traveled in the woods, made wagon roads and then railroads. It's impossible, impossible feats. It doesn't make any sense. Just the misery, the absolute misery and the difficulty of it. It's unbelievable. The daring, the courage. And here we are in 2024. Oh, well, Slater, we're fixing up some roads. Things are pretty good. No, not good. I want to be thriving. That was the word that popped up on Friday when we kept talking about it. Thriving. I want to be thriving. I want the State of the Union to be thriving, and I want everyone to know it. I don't even want a president up there to tell me things are thriving. I want it to be where everyone knows we're thriving. I want America to do something where someone would paint a picture of it and say, whoa, that's unbelievable. And maybe those days are gone. Maybe it's just not a thing that can happen anymore. Maybe the best we can do now is the Apple Vision Pro. Like, oh, whoa, what a cool thing. My favorite painting from Bierstadt, Bierstadt, maybe Bierstadt. Surveyor's Wagon in the Rockies. Surveyor's Wagon in the Rockies. Look up that one. There was a point on the trip when the artists, the painters, asked Lander if they could break away from the pack for a while and they could go and they could just go sketch some things. And Lander let them go off and they went off in the middle of nowhere. And Bierstadt said they had to hunt for food and they just slept wherever they were and they were thoroughly filthy. And he said he's never had a more wonderful time in his whole life. And he made this painting, Surveyor's Wagon in the Rockies. And it just speaks to me because it's just the absolute emptiness of where they were, how impossibly difficult of a task they were a part of, and the absolute potential that this country had. So if you had to Google one, Surveyor's Wagon in the Rockies. And then the exploring had to stop for Lander because the Civil War started and he became a general in the Union Army. I'll end with this and then we'll go to Al. So Lander wrote a poem for him and his men. So this is inspired by the men of the 20th Massachusetts Volunteers during the Civil War. And it was said to them, fewer of the Massachusetts officers would have been killed had they not been too proud to surrender. That's the famous line about them. So Lander wrote this poem. He said, I deem us proud, for we are more than proud of all our mighty dead. proud of the bleak and rock-bound shore a crowned oppressor cannot tread. Proud of each rock and wood and glen, of every river, lake, and plain. Proud of the calm and earnest men who claim the right and the will to reign. Those are the people who went west. Proud of the men who gave us birth, who battled with the stormy wave to sweep the red man from the earth and build their homes upon their grave. Old state, some souls are rudely sped. This record for thy 20th Corps, imprisoned, wounded, dying, dead. It only asks, has Sparta more? Love that, has Sparta more? Speaking back to Battle of Thermopylae. Massachusetts, brave men, do you have any more? Do we have any more men like this in our past? The men like that we used to have? Do we have more men like that? Has Sparta more? Has America more? Or are we content with our bread, circuses, Oscars, and infrastructure bills? Let's go to Arnold in Alabama. Arnold, how you doing, sir?
Hey, Mike. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing really good. What's on your mind?
That's excellent. Hey, I was just curious, here in Alabama, I'm real upset about Katie Britt. Clearly, performative outrage can be really, really difficult to pull off. Do you think other top performers like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Nancy Mace can assist Katie Britt in raising her game to avoid future embarrassment?
So just to back it up for everyone, Katie Britt, senator from your state, Alabama, was the youngest female Republican senator. I don't know all the qualifiers. She's 42. So she gave the rebuttal to the State of the Union. And it was, I didn't watch the whole thing, but it was very sing-songy. Do you agree with the assessment that she gave what could be perceived as an inauthentic speech?
Yeah, if you want to be a star in the entertainment wing of the GOP, you really have to be perfect with performative outrage.
Yeah,
you can't slip up at all. How is she going to become a star in the entertainment wing?
Yeah. So what do you think of Katie Britt?
Well, I think if Marjorie Taylor Greene and Nancy Mace and Lauren Boebert, I think they can really help her with the performative outrage. Hmm. And if they work with her, she could get her game up to their level.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you're doing. So why? So you're not from Alabama, obviously. So what's your problem with Katie Britt?
Oh, nothing at all. I think embarrassing yourself on national TV is wonderful.
Yeah. We've done this before. Arnold, or whatever your name is. Every opinion is welcome on this show. You just have to have an argument. So if you would like to come in, I don't know why you feel like, I don't know if this makes your day better. If you feel good about yourself, you move on the rest of your day feeling happy, or like you improved America or society or whatever. Like, I don't know what's going on in your life that you feel this is a worthwhile use of your time and people's time or whatever. But if you would like to make an argument about Katie Britt's, what she said, or even if you want to be so petty as to talk about how she said it, that's fine. But just make your statement and you don't have to be like a cynical jerk. So do you have a statement as to the content of Katie Britt's response? Or if you would even like to talk about how she did it, we can have that conversation too. Seems silly to me, but if you want to, we can. So would you like to make a real statement?
It makes me happy to trivialize her shows for the jokes that they are.
Okay. Thanks for your time. So the Katie Britt thing. We can take a break, come back. I feel bad for Katie Britt because she's not an actress, like the wonderful actresses and actors who we saw on highlighted last night at the Oscars. And she over-rehearsed her speech. That's what that is. If you're not a performer and you over-rehearse because you're nervous, because it's a nerve-wracking thing to be on national TV and you have a camera in front of you. It's very hard to talk to a camera. People don't realize how hard it is to talk to a camera. So you're going to rehearse over and over and over again. And then when you rehearse so many times, it loses authenticity to it because you're not a performer. You're not an actor. You're just a regular person. And I wish I could express to people how hard it is to talk to a camera. So when you're on Fox News or wherever, you're just sitting in a chair in a little room and there's just a camera in front of you and you have one earpiece in your ear, your right ear, and you don't see anything because there's a delay. So there's no camera, you can't, there's no TV screen. So you can't see the people who are talking to you. If you're on a panel, you can't see the panel. It's very hard. So they'll talk to you on the camera. You're looking into this camera and the host will ask you a question. You're looking and you're trying to listen. You're trying to respond. You're trying to think of what to say. It's very hard to do. And then when it's over, you have no idea what just happened. You're like, oh, I don't need, like, what did I say? Did that go okay? You feel like you're totally lost at sea when it happens. It's very hard to talk to a camera. Especially if that's not what you do. So it was just over rehearsed and easy to make fun of. And I feel bad for her that she happened to have given this rebuttal to the State of the Union right before the Oscars. So it was because it was so easy to make fun of. Now Jimmy Kimmel was able to make fun of it. And of course, it was so easy to make fun of. It's going to be on Saturday. Of course, Saturday Night Live is going to make fun of it. And all the people could just mock her because she's just a regular woman who was doing her best to give a speech and like that, you know, we have to crap on her because of it, because you have petty people like that guy who hate themselves because hurt people. So these people who hate themselves had to take it out on poor Katie Britt here and can't ever get to the content, which is a shame as well. And that's a job. That's, by the way, it's a thankless job. Rebuttal to the State of the Union. You say no, thank you. Say pass. Don't get a lot of wins in the conservative movement, so when we get them, let's celebrate them. AWR Hawkins. AWR, did you watch the Oscars last night, sir?
No. I didn't. I missed it.
What do you put the attire, the clothes, and the Hollywood.
Yeah, I missed it. I don't know what happened. To be honest with you, I was putting a new red dot on a 300 blackout. I'm going to use it to hunt with next month, and so I was zero in a sight. So that's what I was doing.
So you had anything else to do?
Right.
Yeah.
And if I wasn't doing that, I was going to change my oil. I don't even change my own oil, but I was just going to do it. See if I would, if I needed to learn how to change my own oil on a regular basis.
I feel like you and I could list off a lot of things before Oscars comes into the picture of things to do.
Yeah, you're right.
Do you even have cable? Do you have television?
Yeah.
Okay, so at least you could have watched it. At least you're physically capable of watching it.
Yeah.
Give us the latest Second Amendment. We've got a bunch to go over here, but what is we got some states that are now stepping up. What happened?
Right. Well, we're now up to 39 constitutional carry states. Last week on Tuesday, Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry signed constitutional carry. That'll go into effect on July 4th, but that makes that the 38th constitutional carry state. And then that was on Tuesday. On Thursday, Henry McMaster in South Carolina signed constitutional carry, making that state the 39th state. So now you have 39 states where the Second Amendment is your carry permit. And that's just remarkable.
Mm. What does that mean exactly, the constitutional carry state?
If you're a lot of these states, and it's important that you look at your state, a lot of these states apply to residents. The constitutional carry applies to residents in
many states it applies to everybody, but it means that if you can legally possess a gun, if you could legally carry a gun in your state, you know, you don't have a crime that would prevent you from doing that, then you don't need a permit. You wake up, and when you want to carry a gun for self-defense, you don't have to get government's permission. And that's how it ought to be. Now, every state that has constitutional carry still has a concealed carry permitting program. And I think that's a smart deal because you can get a permit, and that way you have reciprocity with other states. And so that's not a bad deal. So until all 50 states are constitutional carry, it's still not stupid to get a concealed carry permit just so you have reciprocity with other states.
So you could get a permit if you wanted to, but you don't need one?
Right, but you don't need it. If you lived in, let's say, Arizona or Texas, or you live in, let's say, Oklahoma or South Carolina or Kentucky or wherever, any of these 39 states, you wake up today and you want to carry a gun for self-defense, and you're a legal gun owner, then you carry a gun for self-defense, and you don't have to ask government permission. Your state law is very clear on that. That's what constitutional carry does.
Mm. That's a big deal. So two states now join that bandwagon. Why? Did anything in particular happen? Because usually if there's a shooting, a state, or maybe I've been in California for too long, but usually when there's a shooting that makes the news conveniently that they can use, they move the other direction. They pass more gun laws. So what's happening in these two states, right, Louisiana and South Carolina, that they went towards this direction?
Well, I can speak to Governor Jeff Landry's action on Tuesday, because, you know, he has just become governor and he ran on fighting crime. Crime really rose under the previous governor, who was a Democrat, John Bel Edwards. And John Bel Edwards refused to sign constitutional carry. And when Governor Landry signed it on Tuesday, and Breitbart was there, so I heard this firsthand, when he signed it, he made the point. He said, look, I promised you I'd fight crime, and this is part of fighting crime. And he really stressed, which I appreciated, he really stressed the importance that this provides for women, that if a woman feels like she's under threat, and she may only figure out she's under threat on Tuesday night, when she gets up Wednesday morning and she doesn't want to leave her house without protection, well, she can do that now. She can take that protection. She doesn't have to wait on government to give her approval. And he said, so this is a great way for women to be able to protect themselves. And, you know, we've seen Breitbart over and over, Mike. I covered a story in 2015 in New Jersey, a woman, Carol Bown. It's like the word brown without R in it. Carol Bown had asked for state's permission to carry a gun. That's what you have to do in the non-free states. So there in New Jersey, she had to request permission to own a gun and then to carry a gun. And while she was waiting on the state to give her permission, her ex, and I can't remember if it was her ex-husband or her ex-boyfriend, but either way, it was her ex, while she was waiting for permission to carry a gun, he stabbed her to death in her driveway. And so this is what Landry's saying. Landry's saying, I don't want that scenario in Louisiana. If you need to carry a gun, you're a law-abiding gun owner, you carry it. And he says this sends a strong message to criminals too, that the person you pick on may be able to defend themselves.
Biden, State of the Union, talked about guns and wanting to ban them, and assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. I'm demanding a ban. What does that mean? What's an assault weapon in his world, and what's a high-capacity magazine?
In Biden's world, there's no telling, Mike. I mean, I'm being honest. I don't have any idea at this point. He's talked about 100 rounds, 100 round clips. He's talked about, I don't know, all the different things. He's told us that 9mm bullets blow the lungs out of the body. I mean, so I don't really know. But usually when someone says assault weapon, someone like Biden, they mean AR-15s. And, you know, we're over 27 million such rifles privately owned right now. That number's from the National Shooting Sports Foundation. So over 27 million of those in circulation. So that gun is wildly popular. But yeah, so that's what Biden wants to ban, and he wants to ban any magazine that holds more than 10 rounds. And something these people never say, Mike, and needs to be said, we've said it at Breitbart, you know, the shooting that they constantly reference, the Parkland shooting, February 14th, 2018. That's their go-to. They look at that shooting. They say this type of gun was used, and we need this type of ban and that type of ban, and we need to ban high-capacity magazines. Mike, they never mentioned that that attacker didn't use high-capacity magazines. That attacker used 10-round magazines because he could fit more of them in his duffel bag. Mm. And so they use a event that actually undercuts their claims. They use that event to push for more gun control. And somebody needs to keep in mind that they're lying on that.
Let's talk about a not free state, California, where I used to be.
Oh, my.
Gavin Newsom, we need a national ban on assault weapons, universal background checks, raise the age to purchase a gun to 21, have a standard waiting period. The president is right. That's why we need to pass a constitutional amendment to get this done.
Right. Well, I mean, it's important for people to remember California, as you know, Mike, I know that I spend a lot of time, about 3 to 4 times a year, on a very high profile shooting that will occur in California. I know there were 4 shootings within either a 7 or 8 day period at the beginning of this year that I covered. I remember a Half Moon Bay, Monterey Park, Oakland, and I can't remember where the 4th one was. But they were all within 7 or 8 days. You had 6 people killed, 11 people killed, so on and so forth. And yet California has had these gun controls Gavin Newsom's talking about, not for years, but for decades. They've had an assault weapons ban since 1989. They've had universal background checks since 1991. You know, you would think, Mike, if these gun controls were as successful as the left tells us they are, then California would be a utopia, but it's not. In 2021, they led the nation in active shooter incidents. So when Gavin Newsom talks, I know I'm listening to an ideologue, because only an ideologue would be this blind to the outcome of what his gun control has done. Only an ideologue could endure the suffering of his people to this degree and keep pushing more gun control.
Now, even some Second Amendment supporters are hesitant to allow people in schools to carry guns. Tell us what happened in Wyoming.
Yeah, Wyoming, hopefully Governor Gordon will sign that this week. But yeah, the bill went to his desk to allow concealed carry on school campuses. And this would include college campuses. And what this is part of a greater effort by Republicans in Wyoming to get rid of established gun-free zones. And that would mean like state recognized and so on and so forth. Let's get rid of those, because these are places where criminals know they can open fire with impunity. And I'm going to tell you, I've been with Governor Gordon more than once, and I was most recently with him at the SHOT Show in Las Vegas. And I'm telling you, Wyoming is lucky to have this guy. And he's pro-gun like you can't believe. But what's more important than that is he's pro-common sense. And he looks at these things and he says, look, we've created these zones where people can't defend themselves. We've got to get rid of them.
I think people get,
that's what he's doing.
Sorry to interrupt. People get caught up on the guns in school, concealed carry in school. I think people assume that everyone has to carry a gun, or all teachers have to carry guns. And I don't want my kindergarten teacher carrying a gun. And you're like, no, that's not what that is. It's a funny assumption that people make.
Yeah. Well, the beauty is every teacher who wants to carry a gun, I guess, could carry a gun. But the beauty is, the other side just has to start guessing now. See, if someone were thinking about attacking a school, now they have to guess. How many of these social studies teachers are armed? How many of these English teachers are armed? Or are the English teachers armed but the math teachers aren't? Is the PE teacher armed? See, now there's some equal footing, because now the attacker knows, if I go in that school, to kill innocent children, to kill innocent teachers, I may be the first fatality. And when you have that kind of mentality, if you look historically, this is what's important for people to know. If you look historically, that school system where those teachers can be armed is the last one on the list. And you rarely see some event happen in a school like that. And you never see, and this is very important, you never see a teacher, an armed teacher, harm his or her children. And the left will always say that, that even the teacher would be a danger if he or she had a gun. That's a lie, Mike. That's just more hysteria from the left.
I see a picture of you here in Louisiana at the signing of that constitutional carry legislation. What do people think of you, AWR, when you're wearing your Breitbart hat?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think about I just know when I walk in, we all know that Breitbart's there, and, they're just used to it. You know, I've been with Governor Landry before. We were supposed to hunt a couple of years ago, and I can't remember what came up. But so he knows me when I walk in there, and he knows I'm always wearing that Breitbart hat. He gets that smile on his face, and that's just it. It's how it is. But
I'm so
happy for the people of Louisiana now that they don't have to go through that process anymore. Landry kept his word.
That's awesome. Last question for you, AWR. We asked this on Friday after the State of the Union address. I just asked you, what is the State of the Union? How would you answer that question? The State of the Union is what?
I would say fragile. I'll tell you what bothers me, Mike. The left laughs at us for saying this, and us, I mean conservatives. But we still don't know. Who has crossed our southern border? Who's crossed in? Do we know it was only this type of person or that type? And by type, I don't mean racial. I mean mentality and intentions. Do we know that no terrorists cross, Mike? Do we know that no criminals cross, Mike? Do we know that? No, we don't know those things. And so eventually, this is going to percolate, and eventually, I fear we're going to have a terror attack like we can't imagine. And when that happens, the Democrats are so ruthless and they lack morals to such a degree that when that terror attack happens, if it's firearm based, they will respond to that. Instead of saying, oops, we're sorry because we opened the border. Instead of saying that, they'll say, we need more gun control for the law abiding citizen because the illegal immigrant did this. So now the law abiding citizen can no longer own this. And it's going to be a all-out mess. On top of that, who knows how many lives will be lost in the attack. No, so I think we're in a fragile situation.
Yeah, it'll be your fault. It'll be AWR's fault. AWR, we're going to talk to Curtis Sliwa coming up in just a minute about the New York City subway and the governor deploying the National Guard. What do you make of that, of us getting to that point, and of someone on the left deploying the military?
If you read Mike Bloomberg, affiliated Evertown for Gun Safety, read which state they rank as number two in the country for gun control. They're so proud of it. New York. So if that gun control in New York, it's just like talking about California, if that gun control is so effective, why do they have to put the National Guard in that subway system? See, the reason you have to do that is when you disarm good people, bad people know they can now attack with impunity. We saw that in Chicago when they had the handgun ban, 1982 to 2010, their homicide numbers were even higher than they are right now, which is hard to believe. But you're seeing the same thing play out in New York. It's unnatural to be told you can't defend your life. It's unnatural because, as you know, if you read John Locke or you read even our founding fathers, when you read them, you understand our greatest possession is our own life. And one of our very first rights recognized in that Bill of Rights is the ability to defend that life, our greatest possession. And the Democrats in New York have taken that away.
The great AWR Hawkins. AWR, thanks for bringing these two states, Louisiana and South Carolina, to our attention. It's good to celebrate.
Thank you, Mike. Great to be with you.
Grateful for you. That's AWR Hawkins, for a Second Amendment correspondent of Breitbart.com. For real, though, how many wins do we get? I feel like conservatives don't get a ton of wins, and it would be easy for these wins in these states to just be forgotten about. But no, we need to know when we move the ball forward in a great way like that. That's a great line, too, by the way. It is unnatural to not be able to defend your life. That is the unnatural thing. That's a great line, a great way to put that. Remember that one. It is unnatural for the government to tell you, you can't defend your life and you are not allowed to defend the life of your family. It's great.
I'm American made. I got American parts.
We are airlifting our embassy personnel out of Haiti. Haiti is right off our coast. Not to mention, remember when there were like tens of thousands of Haitians on our border and like a drone went over and it looked like Haiti? Like they built shelter that looked like it was in a Haiti slum. They're all here now, right? But now we have some more to-dos in Haiti that I think is worth checking in on because they're pretty close to us. So we'll do that tomorrow at 7 o'clock. And then we have a congressman on to talk about this bill that would ban TikTok. Because I don't think the people in Congress are prepared for the backlash from people who have no idea what's going on in politics and why you would ban TikTok when one day they sign into their TikTok and it doesn't work. So I just want to make sure these people know what they're in for when they do this thing that they should do. But, oh, baby, will there be some backlash.